You are tuned to CICK News on 93.9 FM in Smithers. CICK News is your news source for regional and provincial news Tuesdays and Thursdays at 8 a.m., 2 p.m., and 4 p.m. It's hosted by Dan Messick and myself, Pamela Hassan. Find and follow CICK News online at smithersradio.com and frequencynews.ca or wherever you get your podcasts. CICK News is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Government of Canada.
Today on CICK News, the BC Nurses Union has been trying to negotiate a better deal with the Health Employers Association of BC in recent months without success. And on Tuesday, the BCNU voted overwhelmingly to support a strike mandate that could see some nurses refuse overtime and potentially sets up the conditions for a strike right across the province at a time when pressures on our healthcare system are at an all-time high. Today, Pam Hassan speaks with Adrian Gear, president of the BC Nurses Union, about what the strike action mandate means and where do we go from here. Stay with us.
I'd like to just start with, what does the overwhelming yes vote in yesterday's strike mandate mean for the timeline and form, I guess, of potential job action across BC?
Right. So, I mean, we haven't taken a strike vote or job action in over 25 years. So all of this is like unprecedented, really. What it means is that we have a very strong mandate from the membership that backs the bargaining committee. And what we went to the membership saying is we need to take the strike vote because we've reached an impasse. And these are the reasons why we've reached an impasse. So the strike vote, it puts us in a legal position to take job action. However, that is not what we want to do. We want to get a deal at the table. This has created, I think, like a really strong message to government and the employer that the nurses of BC are united. We are not going to be pushed around. And we are demanding like negotiations at the table that respect us.
And as of today, have you received a 72-hour promise to get back to the table?
Yeah. So we once we got the results, we communicated to the labor board and to the employer what the results were and invited them back to the table and said, like, we're willing to negotiate if you're going to return to the table with basically an adjusted attitude. And so the employer has indicated willingness to meet again, and we will resume talks today.
Yeah. Adrian, I wonder, what concessions are you seeking from the Health Employers Association of BC on things like benefits parity with other sector unions and protections against workplace violence?
So in terms of our benefits, what the fight is about is the ability to actually negotiate them at the table. There has been strong resistance. We haven't been able to increase or renegotiate sort of our benefit design, despite saying like this is something we want to do at the table. So I don't know if that answers your question. Like, nurses need eyeglasses, for example, so that they can see the very tiny writing on the side of medication vials. They need hearing aids so that they can communicate effectively with their patients. We need strong paramedicals, which does include registered massage therapy, so that nurses who are, you know, experiencing physical and psychological injury on the job every day to keep them healthy and fit so that they can actually continue to care for patients at the bedside. So definitely benefits is significant for us. But what the fight is about is even being able to negotiate them at the bargaining table, because the employer has been resistant so far.
Wow. Yeah, thanks for getting kind of specific with that too, because that is also, those are good touch points to know too, because I know that when people have their own benefits and like myself, like working at like a desk job sort of thing, it's like, you know, like my eyeglasses are like my night guard, for instance, is taken care of, you know, and things like that. So it's just, it's interesting to know what nurses who have such a physical and, like you mentioned, psychologically demanding job are having to fight for what's really part of their job, but also the effects of this job as well.
Well, and again, really what the piece that pushed us to impasse was just being told no, like, we're not going to negotiate this. Mm-hmm. You know, like, we're willing to do the work like at the table. And so it's about being provided an opportunity to even negotiate was certainly part of the issue that, you know, why we ended up declaring impasse and walking away from the table. The other thing I wouldn't mind just sort of highlighting is you know, in terms of our injury rates have gone up by 25% since 2019. Workplace violence, one nurse goes off every 16 hours on a WorkSafe BC claim due to violence. Mm-hmm. Working conditions have drastically deteriorated throughout the pandemic and continue to this day. And so, you know, it is the working conditions are just extremely poor. And so we need strong benefits so that healthy benefits to keep us working.
Absolutely. And I did find a stat as well that says the workplace violence injuries have tripled since 2019 province wide. Here in the north, we actually report even higher rates from assaults in work for nurses. And targeted proposals for addressing these. And please correct me if I'm right, but they were rejected fully by HEABC. But how do you kind of figure that taking, you know, job action maybe, but going back to the table will highlight these risks without compromising patient care, especially for nurses in rural and remote communities?
Sorry, I don't know that I'm understanding the question. So like violence is huge. I'm hearing that, like you're acknowledging that. I'm not understanding the question though, as it relates to the bargaining table.
Oh, I guess just maybe more if you like targeted proposals, things that are like specifically that you see helping Northern BC nurses where those rates right. are even higher.
Oh, okay. So what proposals could benefit that?
Yeah.
Gotcha. So in terms of, there's one proposal that we actually haven't tabled yet, but it does create accountability for employers around violence prevention. There's another proposal that we're very keen about, and it doesn't specifically extend to rural nurses, unfortunately. It is more of like what we're looking for is a pilot to understand AI weapons detection. And so where we're proposing the pilots, they aren't in rural communities. What I can tell you is, though, there is ongoing advocacy. What we want to see is relational security officers in all facilities. And like I know at the University Hospital of the North, they do have relational security officers there, but I'm not aware. And I think I was recently in Fort St. John, mm-hmm. But typically like sort of smaller, more rural, remote facilities, they don't have any provision of security, and they rely on RCMP response, for an example, mm-hmm. which may or may not be effective depending on, you know, like there are some rural and remote communities where RCMP are only on call overnight, or that geographically what they cover is so vast that like a response time, you know, they're doing their best, but it's certainly not, you know, a reasonable response. And so I guess what I want to say is and acknowledge that in rural and remote communities, the risk of violence exists, and there's very little to mitigate and to ensure that nurses are kept safe. Mm-hmm. Like there's huge inequities between these smaller rural and remote facilities and, like, you know, compared to like say St. Paul's in Vancouver or Vancouver General or Surrey Memorial, and yet the risk of violence might not be the same frequency, but the actual risk is serious.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that's like across the board too, you know, paramedics, like, you know, like failing ambulance stations that are 100 years old, that sort of thing, you know, 45 minute distance between communities for one ambulance. Like it is absolutely all over, and I will not digress. I swear I won't. but just kind of just staying on the north for just one more question, if you have time.
Sure.
So how are Northern BC nurses who often do have to travel long distances or they rely on fly-in, fly-out models, how are they preparing logistically, and I guess maybe more accurately, what solidarity measures are in place with Northern health workers who maybe can't stay in the community, but they are obviously such an integral point of healthcare in the community. I guess maybe because I was going to ask about job action, but that's not really at the table. But is there sort of anything that you're bargaining for that makes all BC nurses and the union supporting, these nurses that, again, fly in, fly out, they're here, they're going, they're kind of popping around to remote and rural hospitals. Is there any sort of solidarity measures in place that you're speaking about at the bargaining table?
So when you say solidarity measures, are you talking about like if we do escalate job action? Yeah. Like what will that look like?
Yeah.
So is there a specific rural and remote strategy? I would say that there is, but I'm not actually going to talk about the strategy because like we can't. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you that if we escalate to job action, the last thing we want to do is to interrupt or disrupt further patient care. It's already difficult to access care in this province. And I would say it's exponentially challenging in rural and remote. And not that I'm a rural and remote nurse, but I have made a commitment and have gone out of my way to make sure that like I'm doing worksite visits, that I am visiting northern communities. And certainly do I know it all? No, but do I have an incredible appreciation for what I want to say is like health inequities. Mm-hmm. Practicing nursing is very challenging, but what I also see is for patients, like, oh my goodness, like it is so much more challenging. Going back to the job action piece, what we would do is we would initially want to take actions that did not impact patient care. So we could do things like banning non-nursing duties is an example, which I think would have so much impact in smaller communities because nurses literally do it all there. And so there's so much like ability to say, well, this is a non-nursing duty that then becomes the obligation of the employer, mm-hmm. right? So I think like there's lots of ways that nurses in the North can participate in job action. Yeah.
I was wondering, I read that as well, non-nursing duties. What are some of those duties that are non-nursing that, yeah, nurses are fulfilling now?
Yeah. So, and I want to say that like these tasks are important mm-hmm. to the delivery of patient care. It's just that they don't require a professional nurse to do it. So for example, like portering patients, cleaning stretchers, for example, like in an emergency, like turning them over for the next patient, that kind of thing. Delivering meal trays, going to the pharmacy to pick up medications, going to the blood bank to pick up blood, like those types of things, like emptying laundry carts, answering the phone, like all those things all still need to happen. But what's happened over the years is it's like, oh, we'll just get the nurse to do it. Just get the nurse to do it. When you think about the fact that we are not only in a provincial, national and international nursing shortage, like why are we using nurses to perform tasks that can be carried out by other people? And so when we're in a legal job action position, we can actually say, nope, we're not doing that. For smaller hospitals, community hospitals, that's where we have really big impact during job action, because there literally aren't other people to do those jobs. And so then it's the manager and excluded staff that are required to come in and carry out those duties. So like there is huge opportunity. Now, does it make sense that if we ended up escalating to withdrawing labor, which we don't want to do, like, I just want to make that clear. But if we did, does it make sense that we would be targeting some of these more rural and remote communities? Probably not. We're going to have more impact if we were to withdraw labor from the Vancouver General. Like that's just the reality, mm-hmm. but it doesn't mean that nurses in the North can't, like we're not in solidarity with one another. So I don't know if that answers your question, but like we can restrict overtime. We can work to rule, which again is ridiculous that we have to be in a legal job action situation where we can say, no, we're only coming to work on time, we're leaving on time, and we're taking our breaks, yeah. right? Like that's ridiculous that we actually have to be in a legal job action to do that. Mm-hmm. And so things like that, like we could do, which wouldn't impact necessarily like the provision of care for patients.
Yeah. Adrian, I'm not sure if you want to answer my last question here, but just with National Nursing Week overlapping the vote, how has public response been? And what message do you have for residents facing longer wait times if action escalates?
Well, what I want to say is right now, the provision of patient care in this province is challenging. People are already having issues accessing care. What we're trying to do is we're trying to improve working conditions for nurses, which are ultimately care conditions for patients. And so Nurses have been for here for patients for the residents of BC throughout the pandemic and beyond. They have shown up each and every day despite unsafe working conditions, not having enough nurses to actually provide the care and holding up the system. And so the last thing we want to do is to further impact patient care. And we will do everything in our power not to do that. And we need the public to support us right now. We've been there for the public, and we hope that the public is there for us. And we understand that people also have very strong feelings about, you know, job action and unions and people, you know, standing up for themselves. This isn't something we've done in over 25 years. Mm-hmm. This isn't a path we chose lightly. And I think for the most part, the public does appreciate and support nurses. Certainly people that have interactions with the healthcare system recognize the work and the dedication that, you know, the 55,000 nurses that are unionized in BC, you know, what they do day in and day out. You know, if there's some people that aren't supportive, well, that's their right. Again, this isn't something that we are well versed in. We have not done this in over 25 years. And our goal is to negotiate a collective agreement that respects us, that improves our working conditions and patient care. And, you know, we do not want to impact patients negatively right now. We will do everything in our power not to do that.
Absolutely. Okay, so just a pulse check right now. So we're speaking on Wednesday, May 13th in the morning here. It was announced that there's 72 hours before going back to the bargaining table. So I guess, what do the next couple of days look like for you and for the union?
Well, there's not a requirement to wait for 72 hours to get back to the bargaining table. We are here at the hotel ready to go. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the next, I think 72 hours will tell us whether or not the employer has returned with an adjusted attitude and a willingness to get a deal. So really it's now over to the employer. You know, I'm hopeful if we can, if there's some, you know, collaborative conversations, positive conversations going forward, then that's great. If they're not, then, you know, we will reassess, and if needed, we would issue 72 hours notice to initiate job action. But again, it would be in the form of, you know, applying pressure on employers and not disrupting patient care.
Mm-hmm. Was there anything I didn't ask that you want to include in this conversation today?
Well, I think one thing that I would talk about is ratios. Mm-hmm. And so that's something that we did negotiate in April of 2023. And it was a negotiation that took place directly with the Ministry of Health. And what it does is it requires a minimum number of nurses to take care of a group of patients. And so I'll give you an example of on a medical or surgical unit. One nurse should not be responsible for more than four patients. And in the work that we've done, we have been very thoughtful about creating sort of a rural and remote framework, acknowledging that there are fewer sort of wraparound other support staff in rural and remote communities, and that, you know, we need to actually create some additional redundancy in the number of nurses that get assigned to a facility when sometimes there's only like one or two nurses, right? And so the British Columbia Nurses Union is working really hard to try to address some of the inequities that currently exist for patients and for nurses that are experiencing healthcare in the north and in rural and remote regions. So I think that's important to note, and that, you know, part of the reason why we're so steadfast in negotiating an agreement that improves our working conditions and creates safety in the workplace, you know, is a collective agreement that is competitive, is because we need to hire many, many more nurses, mm-hmm. To this province, and particularly in northern communities. There was an Auditor General report, goes back a few years ago now, highlighting just that point, the inequity and the fact that, you know, there's this nursing shortage, but when you look at how it impacts northern areas, it's mind-boggling. Mm-hmm. And so this is what we're trying to create, is a better system. And to do that, you know, we have to improve the working conditions of nurses. We can recruit nurses, but we're not retaining them. So like we have to fix those issues so that the healthcare system can be more resilient and responsive for patients and people requiring the care. So, you know, and this ratios is a huge part of it. We have the commitment. We started to implement. We're seeing really positive signs, including in rural and remote areas. But we're not going to be able to continue that work if we can't address some of the systemic issues that are, frankly, driving nurses away from the workforce.
Yeah. Adrienne Geer, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today, especially while you're, waiting to hear back from the employer right now. So I appreciate you taking the time.
No problem.
You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or check us out on the web at smithersradio.com. CICK News has been made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at theskeena.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks to my colleague Pam Hassan and all of our roving journalists, I'm Daniel Messick. Thanks for listening.